yeah, would you check with them out there, Annabelle, and see if they're, we're going to try to move them up if we can. All right, then this case is the last matter on our oral argument calendar today, court file A181643, State of Minnesota versus Zong Li. The matter is obviously here for oral argument. Counsel for each party will receive 15 minutes for your principal arguments, and counsel for appellant, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. So feel free to adjust the podium to your comfort as you begin your argument, and please tell us who you are. Are you splitting your time, counsel, or no, you're just going to have one argue here today?
Correct, Your Honor.
All right. Then you may proceed when you're ready.
May it please the court, opposing counsel, my name is Robert Ambrose, A-M-B-R-O-S-E, representing the appellant Zong Li. To protect all Minnesotans, suppression is the only appropriate remedy in this case for any one of the six violations under the Fourth Amendment and Minnesota Constitution, Article 1, Section 10. There are six independent reasons here the court can reverse the district court. First, Trooper Schmidt unlawfully expanded the scope of his stop. Secondly, Trooper Schmidt unreasonably prolonged his stop. Third, the coordinated double stop by Trooper Schmidt and by violated Mr. Lee's constitutional right to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures. And that does appear to be an issue of first impression before the court in regarding coordinated double stops. Fourth, Trooper Bai lacked independent reasonable suspicion to expand the scope of his stop. Fifth, Trooper Bai unlawfully prolonged his detention of Mr. Lee. And sixth, Trooper Bai did not have a sufficient legal basis to conduct a dog sniff for drugs in this matter. Any one of those six independent reasons here, this court can reverse the district court.
Would it be fair to say, Mr. Ambrose, that as to the double stop, there was a reasonable suspicion for each one? I thought, and you know, I'm sure you know the record, I thought they were speeding both times.
And in our position, there was not a basis to stop for the second one. We didn't challenge the basis for the first stop by
So Trooper there was Schmidt. No evidence in the record on the second one that your client was speeding?
There is evidence that we were speeding.
Ah.
However, based on these coordinated double stop cases from the federal courts, one case in particular that is very on point here is the Gorman case. In Gorman, the court said you cannot send an officer further down the road and look for any traffic violation to stop somebody.
So you're suggesting that's really a pretext stop, the second one, not it didn't have anything to do with the fact that your client was actually speeding?
Correct. So in this case,
do we assume pretext when there's an independent basis for the stop, like speeding?
I think here, what we got to look at is that Trooper Bai, the second trooper, was in the median, and he'd already received information on this van coming towards him. In Trooper Bai's testimony, he says when he's sitting in the median, he looked up and saw the van. That is why his attention was drawn to Mr. Lee's vehicle. His attention was not drawn to Mr. Lee's vehicle because of speeding. This wasn't a stop where he stopped a vehicle for speeding and then later determined it was Mr. Lee's van.
But generally when we're looking at stops, we apply an objective standard, don't we? I mean,
correct.
So why wouldn't we do that here? Just because this is a second stop of the same vehicle?
Because these coordinated double stops, as these federal courts are saying, they're more intrusive, they're more coercive. It's almost like an arrest.
Yeah, I understand your argument on that. But, I mean, this was 2 hours and 180 miles southeast of where the first stop occurred. It seems to me that that's pretty attenuated. I mean, I don't know that. And maybe you can help me understand why this case presents the facts that we would want to develop the law that doesn't exist in the state of Minnesota under those circumstances.
And in the Gorman case, the court addressed attenuation. And that case was about an hour. Here, it's an hour and 38 minutes between the time Trooper Schmidt's stop is completed and the time Trooper Bai stops Mr. Lee at 5:38 p.m. They rejected attenuation there because the stops were fairly close in distance. This isn't 5, 6, 8 hours later. He was the only trooper available with a canine in the direction of Mr. Lee's travel.
Did anything occur during the first stop that dispelled Trooper Schmidt's reasonable suspicion that your client was transporting drugs?
In our position is that he didn't have the basis to expand. He didn't have the basis to unlawfully prolong the stop by Trooper Schmidt in the first one. And it starts right away.
When did he expand it? I think that's important because I looked at the squad cam videos and 15 minutes into Trooper Schmidt's stop, he still isn't able to confirm whether there's valid insurance on the vehicle, and he ultimately confirms, based on information that Mr. Lee gave, that there isn't insurance on it based on what Mr. Lee told him. So wasn't that a reasonable basis for the officer to continue the stop up to at least that point while he was trying to confirm registration and valid insurance?
So I think there's about five different points where he expands and prolongs the stop. And it starts about 30 seconds in when he says, what is in all the boxes? He says that 30 seconds into the stop, even though he testified that he didn't recognize anything too suspicious in the vehicle at that time.
All the air fresheners hanging down with a Alaska driver's license and a Washington license plate, under those circumstances, I would seem to think that at that point some bells and whistles are going off in his head that he sees this type of circumstance that's presented to him.
So with the Alaska driver's license, the Washington plates, there's a case called Vasquez versus Lewis. It says it's wholly improper to assume a person is more likely to be engaged in criminal activity because of their state of residence. Additionally, there's a case, State versus Lopez, that says there was no reasonable articulable suspicion to expand the stop when the vehicle was from Washington. There was the presence of air fresheners, and they observed nervous behavior. That's very similar to the situation we have here. But again, Trooper Schmidt testifies at this point, he doesn't even notice anything too suspicious about the vehicle. And there is a case that the respondent...
But isn't he entitled to find out about the vehicle's licensure?
Yes.
And insured status and things like that?
Absolutely. And that was the basis related to his stop for speed.
Well, the expansion of the stop.
Yep. And then he went back to the vehicle. But 7 minutes into the stop, when he goes back to his squad car the first time, he places his first call to Trooper Myron to look for a canine. He places three calls to Trooper Myron at that point. He then goes back to Mr. Lee's vehicle after spending 8 minutes during his first return to his squad. He approaches Mr. Lee's van for the second time. At this point, he has a citation in his hand for no insurance. He goes after Mr. Lee again and talks to him about what's going on. But then he realizes, okay, I'm not going to cite him no longer for no insurance. I'm satisfied he's the registered owner. He testifies about, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. So he goes back to his squad again. And at this point, he again makes calls. Again, he is trying to find a canine.
Right. I mean, there's nothing. He was concerned about drugs, it's fair to say, early on in the stop.
Correct.
And again, my question, was there anything that occurred during that stop that dispelled, I think it was a 34-minute stop, that dispelled his suspicion that there were drugs in this van?
And we believe so, because a lot of these reasons he uses, there's other explanations for why it happened.
But don't we look at the totality and not each one individually, Mr. Ambrose, and deciding whether the officer had a reasonable suspicion, which is a lower standard?
And we absolutely look at the totality of the circumstances is the proper test. However, when you start to look at all these factors individually and you assign some weight to each one, you know, if we're going to assign zero to the air fresheners because the cases tell us, if we're going to assign zero to what state of residence the plate is from, you add up these zeros, the sum is zero.
Well, but do the cases really, I mean, it's totality. I mean, if you have just one thing, that's a different case than where you have multiple. I mean, you have the air fresheners, you have the boxes with the writing, you have the weird where they're from and the drug traffic that comes from those venues. You've got the boarded up window. You can't say the case law says those aren't enough when you have all of them together here. I mean, that's a different totality of circumstances, isn't it?
And I agree under the totality of circumstances test is the appropriate test. However, we also need to look at reasonable articulable suspicion. Here, neither Trooper Schmidt nor Trooper Bai really articulate what is suspicious about these factors. Trooper Bai will testify, or he did testify about, you know, In my experience, I observed these indicators of drug activity. However, he admitted that he didn't have any experience with any of those factors in any of his prior cases. He can't just make conclusory statements about, oh, this is why we're doing this.
But their training draws them to make inferences that the rest of us wouldn't make from necessarily seeing a boarded up window or particular type of writing on a box.
Correct. And I think with Trooper Bai, he talks about, you know, any combination of letters and numbers on the box is going to be suspicious to him. Again, I don't know that that's really articulated. You know, anybody could write anything on any box. You know, in the other context, they say, okay, there's black duct tape. Black duct tape was on one box. There was clear tape on the other boxes. I mean, I just feel like all these factors, you start to look at every single factor, there are reasons why this is not suspicious activity under each factor.
So, I know you're running out of time here, but what information did the second trooper rely on? What is your argument that what information did the second trooper rely on in coming to his conclusions to do the dog sniff that the first trooper didn't basically determine in the first few minutes of the stop up by Fergus or wherever it was?
So the difference between what Trooper Schmidt's alleged basis was for reasonable suspicion and Trooper Bai, the second trooper, were three factors as far as what I remember. One was the single key. Well, a lot of people have a single key. Just one single key I don't think is indicative of drug activity. The second one was the black duct tape on one of the boxes in the back. The third one talked about nervousness, and there are multiple cases about nervousness cannot be a basis to expand a stop. You know, you can't unlawfully prolong a stop on those concerns.
Mr. Ambrose, isn't there case law, and perhaps I'm wrong, where, you know, you get to impute all the knowledge from all the police investigations to determine, you know, what was going on? Is that not right? Am I wrong on that?
I mean, in these sorts of cases with these multiple stops, they talk about the collective knowledge doctrine, that where it is going to be more inherently coercive when you deal with a double stop. I mean, Trooper Schmidt knew he had to let Mr. Lee go. He says on his phone call to Trooper Myron, you know, I'm going to have to kick it. You know, I'm going to have to release him. He couldn't keep prolonging. He couldn't keep doing it. He didn't believe he had enough evidence to do that. He had to let him go. So when you then...
Is it a lack of evidence to do a dog sniff or just not available dog to do the dog sniff? I mean, wasn't that the situation that Trooper Schmidt was faced with? Not that he didn't think there was a good reason for a dog sniff, but that it just wasn't going to happen within a reasonable period of time.
Yeah, primarily Trooper Schmidt, he wanted a dog there and he couldn't find a dog.
Right.
I mean, it was our argument that he didn't have reasonable suspicion anyway to do the dog sniff. But going back to the point with these double stops, it's almost like an arrest. You know, the respondent cites to a case, Knapp versus Commissioner of Public Safety. That case deals with two officers responding to a scene, a liquor store parking lot near the same time, see a gentleman sleeping in the backseat of the car, give him a PBT, he fails it. They tell him, don't drive, don't go and drive. The trooper or the deputies park in an alley. A few minutes later, they see the guy drive, and they stop him. Completely different here. We don't have two troopers here. They don't see Mr. Lee, you know, next to a pile of drugs, and they say, hey, don't touch those drugs. Don't touch them. And then a few minutes later, they see him carrying the drugs. That would be analogous. Knapp is not in this case. But another important thing with Trooper Bai, he did not have independent reasonable suspicion. I don't think that's the case at all here. Three times before he approached Mr. Lee, he got all the information that Trooper Schmidt had. First, he got a call from Trooper Myron, who was not on duty, giving him all the information that Schmidt had relayed to him. Secondly, Trooper Bai calls Trooper Schmidt around 4 o'clock. Trooper Schmidt didn't call Trooper Bai. The second trooper called Trooper Schmidt. He got all the same information again. Trooper Bai then stops Mr. Lee an hour and 38 minutes later, and he reads the CAD notes from the event of Trooper Schmidt. Three separate incidents, he is able to see all the information that Trooper Schmidt had relayed during his stop. He had rose-colored glasses when he approached Mr. Lee's vehicle at that point. I think it's not possible.
I mean, I guess my question is, that's a problem because why not? I mean, you know, if there'd been no, I think it'd be a different case on the second stop if there'd been no speeding, whether there was speeding or not. But I fail to see why the police can't communicate themselves to find out more information. I mean, isn't that the essence of good police work? What are you saying? He should have discounted it and not called them, or no one should have called him? I mean, that seems odd to me.
No, but I don't believe there was enough independent reasonable articulable suspicion. You know, there's a case we cite, Foresty, and we did make a mistake. It was reversed on different
grounds. So just so I'm clear, you're saying, let's say they, I don't know, there was the dog in the first office, the first trooper's car. You're saying had they had the dog right there, there wouldn't have been enough for a dogsmith on the first stop?
Correct.
Okay.
I see that I'm out of time. Thank you.
You'll have 5 minutes of rebuttal, Mr. Ambrose. Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel for respondent.
Good morning, Your Honors, Counsel, and may it please the Court, my name is Ed Stockmeyer. I'm an Assistant Attorney General appearing this morning on behalf of the State of Minnesota. I'd like to begin with one factual clarification just before I forget it, and that is the first portion of the first stop, the initial interaction between the officer and Mr. Lee, the District Court found, and the timestamps on the recording support this, that lasted 2 minutes, not 7 minutes. So this wasn't a period of time during the first stop that was in any way sort of prolonged in any unreasonable manner because of the questions that were asked. The state's position in this case on the first stop is there was not an expansion of the stop until Trooper Schmidt began looking for a drug dog. That took a little bit of time to complete those calls, and so I think it's fair to say that there may have been an expansion at that point.
So tracking down the insurance and licensure is just part of the normal traffic stop. It is not an expansion of a traffic stop.
Correct, Your Honor, and that actually took some time to do in this case, but that was justified by the circumstances because neither the registration nor the insurance was actually associated with Mr. Lee's name. The officer couldn't find any record of that, so he had to make a call to the insurance company, and so that was all justified, and that's sort of ordinary police work in any traffic stop. But let's say for the sake of argument that appellant is correct and that when the officer said, "What's in those boxes?" that was actually an expansion of the stop. I'd like the court to look at what the trooper knew at that time. So at that point, there were objective facts indicating that the vehicle may not belong to the driver because he had an Alaska driver's license and the vehicle was registered in the state of Washington. He knew that the occupants were transporting some significant amount of cargo in all the boxes, and he knew that the occupants were trying to conceal the contents of those boxes because they had boarded up one of the windows and they had hung at least one air freshener directly above the boxes. So they were trying to conceal them both in terms of odor and sight. And so even if we go back and say that the stop was expanded at the point in time when the officer said, "What's in those boxes?" that question was justified. There was reasonable articulable suspicion to at least suspect that these people may be trafficking drugs at that point in time. The second point I want to make is that at no point during the first stop were any of those preliminary suspicions dispelled. And I think that this is the really key point, whether suspicions have been dispelled when we get into the context of multiple stops of a driver. In this case, when Trooper Schmidt let Mr. Lee go, again, none of his suspicions had been dispelled. He wanted to continue the investigation, but he couldn't because the closest dog was approximately 2 hours away. In fact, the closest dog was Trooper By's dog. So because those suspicions were still active, there's absolutely no reason to say, under an objective analysis, that anything that Trooper By did subsequent to that was in all questionable or untoward. All of the suspicions that had been originally developed were still live. And I think this question of whether suspicion has dispelled, if we focus on that question, we really are able to make some sense of the federal cases that appellant cites. And just for the court's benefit, those cases are Morin, Ilazi, Peters, and Forrest. On the one hand, you have Morin and Peters. In those cases, the appellate courts were highly skeptical of what the officers did. But also in those two cases, you have instances where the initial suspicion during the first seizure was dispelled. In Morin, they ran a drug dog around the suitcase, and the dog did not give an indication. There was reason there to no longer think that there would have been drugs in that bag. In Peters, there was a consent search of the vehicle, and the officer couldn't find anything. Then we have two other cases, and those are Ilazi and Forrest. And although they talk about this rule about successive stops, in both cases, they specifically decline to apply that rule. And they say that there are circumstances where we don't need to. And I think the important point in both of those cases is that there was no, dispelment of the original suspicions. And so the way to make sense of those cases, I think, appears to be, has the original officer's suspicions been dispelled such that the subsequent law enforcement activity becomes objectively reasonable? And I think if we focus the question in that way, we avoid the difficulty of talking about, well, what was the second officer's motivations? Was this pretextual? We can still be concerned about egregious successive stops, but do it under the rubric of an objective test.
I assume the response to what you just said here, Mr. Stockmeyer, is going to be those suspicions, whether they were dispelled or not, had to be reasonable in the first place. Because if they're not reasonable in the first place, then it doesn't really matter.
Certainly,
then they become mere whim, caprice, or idle curiosity.
2 points on that, Your Honor. Yes, to answer the question directly, that if there's not reasonable suspicion, even if they don't find anything during the first stop, that's still a Fourth Amendment violation. But the question then as to the second seizure, when contraband is discovered, is not about a substantive Fourth Amendment violation. It's whether the given Fourth Amendment violation under the fruit of the poisonous tree doctrine should taint the subsequent activity. And that's what the court held in Gorman, that it did, and in Knapp, the Minnesota Supreme Court held that slightly similar circumstances there was not. And really the question is about attenuation. And the factors for attenuation are the flagrancy of the police misconduct, the temporal proximity between the Fourth Amendment violation and the subsequent action, and any intervening circumstances. Here, I really fail to see that there's any police misconduct. The allegation of misconduct has to do with, well, these officers are speaking to each other, they're coordinating, they've got some pretext, but they should be speaking to each other. There's nothing untoward about that. That is good law enforcement practice.
In your opinion, would the second stop have been justified even if there had not been speeding observed a second time?
That is not this case.
But
to answer the question, if that case were to arise where you had an instance where Trooper Schmidt has reasonable suspicion, it's not dispelled. He tells another officer, there's someone coming your way. He'll be there in a few hours. Keep an eye out. The suspicions aren't dispelled, and there's no traffic violation. I think we would have a case. I would argue that stop is lawful precisely because the suspicions haven't been dispelled. Now, the important fact there, I think, would have to be the passage of time. So over the course of 2 hours, you could imagine somebody, after they're stopped once, getting rid of the drugs. And maybe that's something that we would have to account for. But I do think the fact that the original suspicions had not been dispelled, again, would be the key fact in that situation. So unless this court has any further questions, I guess I will just end by saying that Trooper Bai's observations were the same as Trooper Schmidt's. So to the extent that there was reasonable suspicion during the first stop, there was also an objectively reasonable basis for the expansion of the second stop. Unless this court has any questions.
I want you to comment one issue on the record, because I want to make sure, I want to know if counsel disagrees about this or not, and how significant it is or not, I don't know. But when did the troopers learn the information that Mr. Lee had flown from Anchorage to Washington, bought the van, and then headed to St. Paul?
That is a good question, Your Honor, because I think there's some confusion in the record on that. If you watch the recordings, my independent view, was that that aspect, that he flew to Washington, purchased a car, and then drove to Minnesota, wasn't discovered until he spoke with Trooper By. The district court's findings seem to suggest that that was learned during the first stop. Maybe there's something I'm not hearing because there's sort of traffic noise interference.
The quality is not good.
Right, but based on my careful listening, I don't think that particular fact was learned until the second stop.
All right.
But I don't think that affects the analysis because you still have the exceptionally suspicious circumstances with the windows being boarded up, an air freshener hanging from the back directly above the boxes, and everything along those lines.
Thank you.
So the Anything state further? Simply asks that this court affirm Mr. Lee's conviction. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Stockmeyer. Mr. Ambrose?
Thank you, Judge. One thing I want to address on rebuttal is the case Forrest or Foresty. We did not properly mention that case in our brief about it was reversed for suppression. It was not reversed on suppression. It was reversed on other grounds. That is a federal case dealing with a double stop. And the reason why that one was not reversed on the suppression issue was because the second officer had independent, reasonable, articulable suspicion that the first officer did not. And the second cop in that case observed marijuana on the driver's pants and cocaine on the driver's nose. We do not have that in this case. Trooper By did not see drugs on Mr. Lee's pants or face. So that was a distinguishing factor on the reason why they said the motion to suppress should have been denied. Secondly, I want to address the fact that this was a coordinated stop should be undisputed here based on the number of communications that were had. And again, I just want to mention that Trooper Schmidt told Trooper By this was a vehicle to look out for. Keep an eye out for it. In Gorman, they say, you're going to need a dog when they're talking about doing the next stop. Here, I don't think there's any credibility to say that this wasn't a coordinated stop. Trooper By visually estimates Mr. Lee's speed when he's in the median. And again, when he said he's in the median, he looked up and saw the van. He wasn't running radar. He didn't run the radar until he started to follow Mr. Lee's van.
And then he did see the speeding. I mean, it confirmed his visual
right.
estimate.
And then he did see the speeding. But in Gorman specifically, that really discusses gamesmanship by officers. You know, following vehicles and then trying to spot any traffic infraction is gamesmanship. You know, how many times are we going to let people do this?
Well, except the subjective intent of the officer generally on traffic stops, as Judge Bjorkman pointed out before, isn't something we take into account. Whether there's an objective basis for the stop is really what we look at.
Right. And I think just they're tantamount to an arrest when you start to do these successive stops.
I see.
You know, they didn't call ahead and say, hey, look out for this van because it's speeding and I couldn't get it. And then he confirms the speed. This is a totally different situation than that.
Mm-hmm.
We can also start to look at the cases when we look at expansion and prolonging Illinois versus Caballas in the Rodriguez case from the United States Supreme Court. In Rodriguez, they said you don't get bonus time. You know, if you complete your stop expeditiously, you don't get bonus time then to talk about unrelated activities. They rejected a de minimis rule in that case. They said, you know, they had used 8 extra minutes to look into criminal activity. Here, the vast majority of the stop was Trooper Schmidt trying to find a canine. You know, I would mention it was probably about 30 minutes of the total stop. He's making calls to Trooper Myron. He's going back to Mr. Lee multiple times. I mean, there are 5 distinct times where he's prolonging the stop. And probably the most egregious is when he decides, okay, I'm going to cite Mr. Lee now for no proof of insurance. I have my citation for no proof of insurance. I'm going to go back to Mr. Lee one last time, and I'm going to give him this citation, knowing full well he doesn't have a canine. He has exhausted all avenues to get a canine. And he still, after giving Mr. Lee the citation, starts to inquire. He starts to ask him things again.
But what did he learn at that point that affected what Trooper By did an hour and 38 minutes later? I mean, I may agree with you on that, that yeah, he extended it, but what information was gathered that was improperly used down the road?
So the two questions I think
that
he
point.
Asked, primarily, he asked again for consent to search, and he gets denied again.
Yeah.
And Trooper By knew that consent was already denied, and Trooper By tried to do that too. Secondly, Trooper Schmidt asked about the Hmong ceremony in St. Paul.
Uh-huh.
You know, he's going after him again. He's trying. He just wants consent. He wants further information. This is almost exactly like what we're dealing with in Rodriguez. You know, he had finished the purpose of the stop at that point, and he knew he did not have a canine. He should have let Mr. Lee go, and he did not. And that is one of the basis we asked this court to reverse the district court's order denying suppression in this case. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. And thanks to all of you. The matter was excellently briefed, presents some very difficult issues. We'll take the matter under advisement. We'll issue a decision within 90 days.
It's nice to see you again, Mr. Stockmeyer.
And we adjourn. Thank you.